Hi, and welcome to episode one of the Audio Production Workshop podcast. In this episode, we talk to legendary frontman Andy Carnson Therapy. Please come with me on a journey as we get deep on all things recording, producing, and crafting over his 28-year career. Welcome to the Audio Production Workshop in association with Camden Rocks. I'm here with the ever wonderful Andy Carnson Therapy. You're playing Camden Rocks on the 3rd of June. This is your second time, am I right?
Yeah, well, it's first time it's a solo acoustic show.
Right,
we've done it before a few years ago with a band.
Nice. What acoustic guitar are you playing? What's your main one for these wooden wire?
It's a Gibson J200. I got it about 4 years ago in 2013, 2014. And I'd been doing a couple of just low-key acoustic shows that I was asked to do by certain venues. And I had an old Norman Canadian acoustic, which sounded a bit thin and a bit bright. And I went down to see the Gibson people in London and try a few acoustics, and I really liked the J200. And I've just had it ever since. I keep it under my bed.
It's not a little go-to.
Yeah.
Now, I know your rig, because obviously I've recorded you a few times over the years. Could you please tell the viewers where it started and how it evolved and what you've got now?
The very first record we ever did, I had a Fender Twin. I had a PV Hop distortion. I had a Boss Stereo Chorus. I had a Dodd Compressor Sustainer. And I had a Boss DSD2 digital delay. I played a Epiphone 335 dot through that, and that was my rig. And it was all standard tuning. And then by the time of our second mini album, the only thing that changed was I was playing a USA Fender Tele. And then from 1993 onwards, I moved to Gibson guitars, mainly SGs.
Is that the X? Was that the SGX?
I didn't change until the SGX, really, until I accidentally got one in 2009. Before that, I was always just SG standards. Through two Marshall 900 cabs with more or less the same pedal rig. And nowadays, I use the same Marshall 900s, 4x12 cabs. I've got a Gibson SGX. I've got four of those. They were like a limited edition made a few years ago with like active pickup circuitry.
Are these the TTs?
They've got the 500T pickups in them, which are a lot more distorted, and I really like those. And it's more or less been the same effects. Pedals as well, I've been used ever since. The only thing that's changed is I don't use the distortion now. I get that through the amplifier for the drive in it. But I still use the same Boss pedals that I've always used.
Nice. Obviously, you have a very long recording career, and I'm assuming by now you know how you like to be recorded or how you like to record. Yeah. What's kind of like your favourite vibe?
Well, things changed with us because we started so long ago. You know, we started our first recording we did in Christmas of 1989, the first one that got released. It got released in 1990. There was no digital when we started recording. And then the first album we actually did digitally was in 2007.
Oh, okay.
Which was called One Cure Fits All. Before then, everything was done completely analog. So that was always, you know, it took a while. Whenever we went to digital recording, that changed things a little bit. It meant that we could record actually a lot quicker because the process was a lot quicker. The last four or five albums have been great. We've recorded them in a wonderful, wonderful studio called Blast Studios up in the northeast of England in Newcastle-upon-Tyne. And it's got a lovely sound.
That's an SSL console, isn't it?
That's an SSL console. And we do that with really just old-fashioned drums first, then we add the bass and rhythm guitars, vocals last. But, you know, I quite like doing it that way. You know, there has been times in the past. We did an album called Suicide Pact You First.
That was with Head.
Great. Well, we started that in Milton Keynes in Great Linford Manor, which was owned by Pete Winkleman, who's now the chairman of MK Dons.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. And we were there whenever that whole takeover thing was beginning to take seed. We did that. We did the drums there, and then we moved from there to... Where did we go? Oh, no, we did the whole album there, yeah. It was Infernal Love. We did the drums at Milton Keynes, and then we went to Real World.
Oh, lovely. And Real World, and that was that...
Real World's Peter Gabriel's place in Box. In the West. Yeah, in Bath.
And it was with Al Clay?
That was with Al Clay.
Why Al Clay? I have to ask this, because he did a lot with Hans Zimmer.
Yes, he did. There's an embarrassing story behind this, actually, and it's something which I really, really feel really bad about. We did Trouble Gum with Chris Sheldon, who was an amazing producer. Mm. And for the follow-up, we should have worked with Chris, to be honest, because we had a really good relationship with him. But we were so fast working in those days and so prolific, we decided, oh, let's completely change it. Let's not make Trouble Gum Part 2. And we really, really wanted a guy called Flood.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Now, in 1994, we'd said to a record company, can we get Flood? We love the stuff he's done with Depeche Mode. Mm. And they said, okay. And in the meantime, we did the Monsters of Rock Festival 1994. And there was a program put out that you buy at the festival. And I'd been interviewed for it. And I'd said, oh, the next album we're going to record soon after this festival, I'd love to do it with a guy called Flood. But what they had printed was, we're doing it with a guy called Flood, which wasn't. And he read this, and as you can imagine, he wasn't too enamored. And he, basically our record company went to him and he said, I didn't like the last album and I don't like people presuming they're going to work with me. So I'm not going to work with him. And we were like, oh my God. So
I'm surprised he wasn't flattered.
No, I don't think. Well, I mean, he had worked with U2 and Depeche Mode, Nine Inch Nails. True. I mean, he was way, way bigger than Therapy were. He's a bigger producer than Therapy were a band. And Al Clay was a very good friend of Flood's, and he had been an assistant. And what happened was, our A&R guy, A&M, said, okay, well, we've got a really good producer now called Al Clay. He's worked with Flood, so he uses the same techniques. He's also worked with, you know, Hollywood movie soundtracks. He can get the cinematic thing you're looking for. And we weren't sure because we never heard of Al. And then we met up with him and he was an amazing bloke. And he was very, very open-minded.
Because he also did some Pixies stuff as well,
He did Pixies and Frank Black stuff. He did Nick Cave and the Bad Seed stuff as well.
Were you in the big room at Real World? Yes. You were in the
big room. We were in the big room.
And that's amazing,
right? Yeah.
God, yeah, I think the control room you can have as all one area, can't you? So you're recording and you're not divided by any walls, I think.
That's right, you can. We had it. I mean, we went after. We set up... it was so big, we were able to set up a Skelectrix track running around it. We spent a fortune on Skelectrix.
Marvellous.
You know, and whenever one of us weren't doing a take, we would do this. I mean, it was because Al Clay was really into cars, so we got like these Skelectrix Porsches and all this kind of thing. But you know, it was great, a great place, and really good. Maybe a bit too fancy for us of where we were in our career. I think, you know, it was, but it was a lovely, lovely place, and the people there were amazing.
Which actually does lead me on to my next question. Which studio has impressed you the most?
To be honest, the one I like the most at the minute is Blast, that we're up to in Newcastle. I just love it. I just love where it is. It's up Stepney Bank. It's been recently developed, the area. It's got the Clooney venue just down the road. It's got nice pubs and rehearsal rooms, and it's a really kind of very creative hub. Mm. But the studio itself is nicely tucked away down this little kind of old industrial unit, which is kind of an L shape. And then I suppose other ones I liked over the years, I used to really, really love Homestead in Randallstown, owned by the legendary Mud Wallace. It's gone now. And it was the only residential studio in the north of Ireland at the time. And by residential, it meant a small room with one bunk bed. You know? But that did us.
How was Mud to work with?
Mud did one of the best things ever I've ever, ever seen. Whenever he worked with us, we recorded their first album, Baby Teeth, in like a day and a half.
Right.
And I was working in a factory at the time, not far. And we'd basically recorded all our tracks, and I'd gone to work at the factory and came back, and the drums were really loud and I couldn't hear my guitar, and the bass was middling, and I'd started work at 11, come back at 7, they'd been mixing all night. So I walked in and I said, I can't hear the guitar. And Mother went, well, you know, Fife wants the drums really loud. And then Michael went, well, I want my bass turned up. So the bass was turned up, and at the end I said, I still can't hear the guitar. And Mud just went, right, and he pushed everything up and said, there you go. There you go, are you happy now? And it sounded amazing. And it was like, he was great to work with, it, you know, he's even for vocal takes, because, you know, we did everything completely sober, but Fife at the time was very shy about singing. You know, at this point in time, whenever we used to gig, he was hidden, you know, behind the cymbals and the mic.
You can kind of hide a little bit.
Yeah, you can hide a little bit, but, you know, in the studio when everyone was watching him, so we had to like dim the lights and whatever. And it wasn't really happening, and he went out of the studio and came back with a case of beer and a bottle of tequila. And just walked into the room with a microphone and says, give this a go. Yeah. And of course, everyone's inhibitions went. And it was great. And which is probably why some of the vocals sound like people are getting their teeth pulled on that album.
On Shameless, record there, that was at Robert Lang's studio. Yeah. Did anything weird happen?
The ghost
in Robert Lang Studios. Was there anything weird that happened in it?
There wasn't, actually, and I found it really beautiful.
It's a beautiful studio. A lot of marble, a lot of stone. Yeah. And I think at that time, what was recording there? I think Soundgarden had just done their album.
The Foo Fighters had done their first. Yeah, it was where Nirvana did their last ever track they ever recorded. I think You Know You're Right was recorded there. That was beautiful. I mean, the material it was written for wasn't that great, but working with Jack and Dino in Seattle in Bob Lang Studios was an incredible experience.
Does it overlook a lake as well?
It does. I mean, you come out of the studio from the entrance and you can overlook a lake, but you can actually, there's a little viewing area up where there's a little rec room, which is an even better view.
Yeah.
But Jack and Dino, boy, does he work. I mean, he works really, really hard. There's no messing about with Jack. You know, no alcohol in the studio. You get out of that studio when the stuff's done.
Does he do times as well? Like, it's this time to this time, no wee hours of the morning. It's just you come in.
He does both. I mean, I don't know where he gets his energy from. He'll be there to 3 or 4 in the morning, going right back in tomorrow at 9. And when you get there at 9, he's been there from 8.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, he works very, very hard.
Brilliant, Andy. Thank you,
Chris. Cheers, thanks for having us on.
My pleasure.